Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is The Diary. This is your host, Stacey Johnson, and my co-host, Ray.
Hey.
It is Sunday, March 14th, a beautiful Sunday here in Sacramento, California, where we are from. And I have to say, and we'll go over it shortly, I am in the presence of my grandson, Elijah. So Ray might have to take the mic for a second.
Hey.
So we'll go over that. But today we are talking about, we're going to continue our discussion on the analysis of the black organizations. And Ray, what are the ones we going to do? Tell me real quick.
We're going to do 100 Black Men. We're going to do the Rainbow Push Coalition.
Okay.
And we're going to do the National Urban League.
Okay, we got three. All right. And then we're going to do a quick overview, because at the end of the show last time, Ray and I were talking about the questions of blacks back in the day, the register to vote is a test that they'd have to take. So we're just going to skim over that just a little bit, just to let you know the things that our folks had to go through back in the day. And then we will continue on until we're done with our discussion of blacks in America, and it is a common destiny of blacks in American society. So, and then, of course, we're going to talk about my week and everything. So, you know, I just want to go over, this week was kind of depressing, you know. So, okay, that's what we're going to discuss in the show. So we're going to start with the week, because I got a couple of things to say, because, you know, there's a reason why I do what I do, and I always want to make that clear. And so, you know, just over the past week, just looking at the news, and I look at it from all different perspectives. I watch Fox News, I watch CNN, I watch local news, you know, and just, you know, if you look at everything, you look at the schools across the country, they're closing. Families, and I love it, in the South, mothers are saying, you know, my eight-year-old is going to be in school with a 12th grader. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that he's going to be safe. So, you know, that kind of thing is going not only here in Sacramento and Natomas, where Natomas High is closed,
right,
but it's going all over the country where, you know, at some point the people that were in charge of this stuff
let everything fall apart.
And it's so sad that we let our children's future just go to the wayside.
Absolutely.
We could cut a whole bunch of other things before we, you know, in my opinion, you know. And then I look at our government every day, some new, whether it's Republican or Democrat, they getting outed about this freak just today. He's in the hot tub with a 15-year-old.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
He was twice that age. Yeah, that was new, just this morning.
That's,
so it's like every
my daughter just
every day it's something new. Somebody's outed corruption, basically.
Right.
On it. So our schools are screwed up, you know. Our government is definitely screwed up, you know. And then churches, you know, my experience this week, because we have the fundraiser where we're trying to do our website, very professional website, and we're telling them, you know, the people that may not have it at a very good price. And, you know, I'm calling all these churches here in Sacramento, and it's like there's nobody answering the phone anywhere. You know, and you're supposed to be a church, and I'm from the Catholic church, where you could go there
any time of day,
get a care package, get something, you know. And I call these churches, and there's nobody there all week long. I call Saturday at 10 o'clock. Nobody's there. So it's like, government levels broken down completely. Schools broken down completely. Churches are, I bet they opened today, right? They were open this morning on Sunday, right? Broken down, right.
Going around.
You know, so it's just a sad thing, you know? And it's like, that's why our theme will forever be peace, unity, and reconstruction of the black community. Because it's just crazy. You know, this week was a good thing for me, because my two sons finally went and lived with their dad.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good thing for me, because, you know, I'd done all for them that I could do for them as a mother.
Mm-hmm.
So it was time that they go with their father.
And
you know,
if that's what they want to be in, or if they learn things about themselves through that.
Right.
Either way.
Right. And it's a great thing that for whatever reason he was there after not being there for 16,
right,
17
exactly.
years. To take them in.
Maybe,
you know, and
dealing with them as adults.
Well, you know, at some point, I mean, yeah, deal with the mental health, and you know, but my whole point is, for whatever reason, he was there for me when I needed him to be there to take his son.
Now that's great.
So they weren't homeless because I put him out.
What a positive way of looking for
it. Yeah, I put him out.
Okay, I am taking over for a second because Stacy is playing grandmother, but that is an interesting and compelling question that she's asking about.
Right, all right, here we go.
So,
that was Elijah.
With that.
Elijah needed a little talk from grandma.
See,
just for
right?
a second. But, you know, like I said, I just thank him for being there one time to take him. So I had such a refreshing feeling that I had to put my sons out. You know, I had to because they're grown and you're not going to disrespect me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's another thing. My whole point is I'm just like everybody else that I'm preaching to right now. I'm not up on any pedestal. You know what I mean? I'm not any different than anybody else.
You're going through the things
that
you're trying to help people
go through.
Because you know what it feels like to be in it. What better person to do it. That's what we forget when we're always looking for people to have these.
And that's what as a single mom, and, you know, I did what I was supposed to do by my sons, and everybody that really knows me said, you know, you did for your kids more than any single mom they've ever known, or even sometimes when there's a two-parent home, they know that I've never had men in and out of my house, like a lot, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I feel so refreshed that maybe that is why God blessed me, that the one time I needed Freddie Posey, my ex-husband, my dad,
to step
he
up.
Was there because I
there
did what I needed to do for so long, and I got a release, and as much as they don't probably like me right now, this is the best thing because they need their dad.
I think
as their mom, I couldn't do any more for them as a mom than I've already done. They know that I love them. I made them strong. And see, and I deal with other boys out here in the community. And, you know, so I get a perspective of someone that's not my son.
Right.
And I had a good long conversation while I'm going through this stuff with my two sons with a guy that wasn't my son.
One of your volunteers.
Yeah, one of my volunteers, Brian, and he was like, you know, I don't get those cats.
Yeah.
You know, because if you were mama,
Exactly.
That's why I want people to know I'm out here talking about peace and unity and love and reconstruction because I started at home. I started at home. I have peace in my home. I started a new business, and all that's been going good, you know?
About your job and your business, what is that?
And, you know, kind of flow right into it. And, you know, over this past year, now just a little history on me. I went to school, went to college, worked for Motorola for 3 years as a pager repair technician back when pagers was popping.
Oh, wow.
Right?
That's cool.
And I learned the business and I said, hey, I can do this by myself and make tons more money. That's exactly what I did. So I was self-employed when my kids were very young. Once pagers went out, and then their dad left me, I really didn't have a business mind. It was more of a survival thing. So I stopped and I got into a profession. Well, my profession I got into was insurance.
Okay.
I started in the mailroom.
Wow.
As a mailroom insurance person.
Why do you have one of those classic stories of working your way up?
And long story short, 10 years later, I'm a senior claims adjuster with two professional designations in the field. Worked very techie kind of claims before I was fired by Fireman in January. And the reason why I was fired was due to low performance. Well, I've worked for 7 insurance companies over my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Always got high accolades and everyone's awards. I was training people. But then for some reason, when I started at Fireman's Fund Insurance Company in April of 2007, it was just like the worst thing that ever happened. The supervisor that I had was a supervisor that worked at Zurich that was known as a backstabber.
Mm-hmm.
She was black, of course, right? Well, at least she was black when she got in trouble, but she wasn't black until I got her in trouble, then she was black. But,
wow.
Yeah.
That's a big statement.
You know, so my whole time at Fireman's Fund was just a fight of, you know what, my parents were denied their rights for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the youngest of 11 kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to take this crap. And it was a fight of that. It's a long story short, they end up firing me.
Right.
But I have, you know, and it was not because of performance, because they have to do the things they have to do to make it look like that on paperwork.
Of course, yes.
You know,
they
so it took them about 2 years.
An acceptable answer, but
right.
What it really was that
I kept standing up for.
They couldn't just gloss over.
Right.
Like,
you know, I kept standing
it.
Up for my rights. It's
right.
Like, I don't understand why the white males can work from home for whatever reason, and they live 5 minutes away from the office.
And don't have kids using
and don't
the
have kids
that
and don't have a disabled
for,
sister
right.
that can't wipe her behind. But I do, and I've asked nicely, but you tell me no for every reason under the sun. I was accused of lying in my claim file. Then I have such a record of my supervisor, like, never doing her job.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I got fired because I decided that's what had to happen to me
right.
because I wasn't going to take the Negro jokes. Every time fried chicken came along, somebody asked me, you know, everything black
wow.
related. You know, I just wasn't going to take it anymore. And it ended up getting me fired, but I knew it. That's why I had an excellent paper trail, and
right.
when I'm ready to pursue it, I will. But, you know, on this show, I don't say anything different than what I live.
Mm-hmm.
I basically got myself fired because I refused to let this economy and everything else make me lose my principles and my who I thought I was, and just be quiet.
Right, be quiet to keep the job.
You know, and I basically got fired.
A lot of people are doing that.
For that reason.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people are people that so-called say they love me, they're just cowards because now they love me but don't call them and don't email them. You know what I'm saying? But so
okay,
I don't.
You used to work.
Oh yeah, that I used to work with.
They say now
yeah,
they don't contact
yeah.
you. Wow.
And they say, well, I need my job. I'm like, you know what? I need my job too.
Right.
But I need my soul,
character,
my soul,
yeah.
my character, and all of that.
All
so
of that, yeah.
when I'm here on the diary, I don't say anything different than what I personally do myself.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I
yeah.
talk about health care, well, yeah, now I'm a person with a son with asthma, me with arthritis. And no health care
uh-huh.
because I stood up for myself. But see, what the glorious and the wonderful thing that we're going to see is that I did that for a reason, for a purpose, and sometimes you got to be poor for a purpose. And
oh, absolutely.
And we're going to see with if the concept of peace and unity and reconstruction of the black community, if it's going to work, because I'm working it at home
uh-huh.
and I'm asking other people to do the same. So I'm no different from anybody else out there.
Right.
I stood up for my principles, and I knew what was going to happen to me. I could have cowered it down
uh-huh.
and not filed as many HR complaints
uh-huh.
as I did.
Right.
But I refused to. So that's the wonder and the beauty of the God that I, uh-huh. the being that I believe in, because I know that I did that for a reason.
Right.
And we stand up for reasons and for a purpose. And look at our government. Look at our schools. Everybody folded over. Everybody was a coward. Nobody stood up for anything, and that's why we are the way that we are.
Absolutely.
So I'm waiting
yeah.
here poised, just waiting to see that my dedication of doing what's right and
mm-hmm.
saying what's right and putting my life on the line for what's right,
mm-hmm.
we're going to see how it's going to pay off.
Right on.
So this is the diary. This is the soapbox for today,
mm-hmm.
March 14th, 2010. And I say all of this to say I don't tell people to do things that I don't do myself.
Right.
So what I'm going to play today, because it's very important, community for the black community used to be important. Speaking of the Black Panthers, though, that's why they're my idols, because they stuck up for each other no matter what. So what I'm going to play right now is community. The black people have to have a sense of community from top to bottom in order to get things right. So this is the diary. This is your host, Stacey Johnson. I'm here with Ray every Sunday, 3 to 4, no matter what. You say I ain't got a job, but I can keep my internet rolling.
It's the community.
There you go. It's the community. We be back, baby.
right. That was Trinity. And this is Stacy. Mm-hmm. And this is the diary. And I'm sentimental this week because it's just like I see so many things just like falling apart. Mm-hmm. And it's not the falling apart that I worry about. It's how what I can do to just bring things back together, if nothing more for my people. So what we're talking about today, what we're going to talk about, we're going to skip over the register to vote stuff and the questions. Yeah, let's skip over that. I want you to get right to the three, because I thought we were only doing two black organizations, so let's do the three.
Uh-huh.
And give me your thoughts.
Okay.
Are you ready to do that right now?
And this is
the diary. We come out of beautiful Sacramento, and it is beautiful today on Sunday. Every Sunday from 3 to 4, I'm your host and the director of the Association of African American Single Mothers. And our website is www.aaasm.org. And what we're doing right now, we're asking people to support. Our volunteers are helping us with a fundraiser for our Boys to Men project, which is a mentoring project program for boys. And our volunteers are producing a very professional four-page website for only $150 down and $50 a month to help us out to get money together, because we, unfortunately, here in Sacramento, don't have men of character to just stand up and do it. So we don't have to pay some. You see me sound enthusiastic about that. So, I mean, you know, they'll show up for work, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's what we're doing. So, about the three organizations, and Ray, anytime you're ready,
okay,
go for it.
All right, well, the first one was the 100 Black Men that I thought that you had on your list.
Right.
And on with the 100 Black Men, interesting thing, because, yes, they are a big organization. Most people know who they are. They don't know that much about the history of it. But the thing of it is that the 100 Black Men, while they have a good basic premise to their organization, which has a whole bunch of different components to it, they're really better chapter by chapter. And I found that to be true with a lot of the organizations. Like, we're in Sacramento here, and the SAC 100 has a vivacious kind of website that, you know, plays music at its opening. They're all a little disenfranchised from each other, but they do have some good basic programs.
Okay. So I can call them and get my son enrolled in something?
The SAC 100.
Okay.
It's a good program. You should go to their website.
They're not here anymore. But
they play.
If they were.
They play. That's funny. They play this great little, opening music thing on their website.
So what you're saying, let's go back to the most important part.
Okay.
Which is a mother, single mom, can go to their website and sign their son up to some program that was mentoring-based or something.
Yes, they definitely have that. They even have an interesting scholarship program, and they also have an interesting thing that they call I can't remember the name of the program, but it's a summer program away at Stanford University for a top, like, I don't know, I think it was 100 or something students,
okay.
And they get to go to Stanford in the summertime, and they have this great program of leadership and education, and they teach technology, and they teach all this other kind of neat stuff.
Okay.
Great program.
Okay.
So they do have individual things, and
But my bigger question
uh-huh.
is that the boys that won't make it to Stanford, which
right.
is probably
90%. They have these great things that they can do, too. They have programs that they sort of have franchised to different chapters. And if you probably ask to, you know, that they get one started at SAC 100, they probably would, if they don't have one. I didn't go that deep.
Okay.
But they have things like Bank on It, an introduction to banking services. They have Borrowing Basics, which is a program that teaches you about borrowing money. Introduction to credit. They have Charge It Right, How to Make a Credit Card Work for You, Not Get It. You know. So
okay. All right. I got
they
you.
Have some really good programs.
Okay. So.
And that's
so.
100 Black Men of America Incorporated. And the SAC 100.
Okay, let's stop right there. Now, let's discuss that in the general sense of
mm-hmm.
the needs of Black Americans,
right.
of Black young men
right.
in America today.
Right.
okay, after the statistics, right, that we went over last week.
Absolutely.
Okay, is that relevant to black men and black society, banking and credit cards?
I do think it is, because I think that that's what kind of made, like, your knowledge of numbers, and
I was raised by a woman born in 1920 and a dad in the 1920. I'm talking about today's.
Right, but what I'm saying, that's what I'm saying, is that one of the things that I think makes you powerful enough to do for yourself is your knowledge of finances. You know, and I think that more.
Okay, well, yeah, that's right. But you know,
okay, we. Black young boys need knowledge in a whole lot of areas.
Oh, absolutely.
But one of the things that.
Okay, so you see where I'm coming from.
Oh, absolutely.
That
our biggest issue may not be finance.
It's
not. It's education.
No.
It's the criminal justice system. So
my thing is,
mm-hmm.
and my frustration lies with, okay, if you're out there, I mean, why are you developing programs that appear to be irrelevant to the majority of young black men. That's irrelevant to the majority of.
It really isn't, though, because that's what people are saying, though, is that where black
you're
people
not getting
other
that's
minorities.
Where they need to be. But do you think that that is going to attract an 18 to 24 year old man to their organization because they get to learn about credit cards?
Unfortunately, you might be getting some 18-year-olds, but maybe the 24-year-old may have already gone.
I don't think so.
What about the 16-year-old? I mean, we have to start somewhere.
But I don't think that's going to attract them.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Let's have some course where you learn how to stop being a statistic.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, we need that. That's part of what we need.
But that's not going to draw them
how,
in.
But how do you learn to stop being a statistic? Maybe part of it is financial
independence. Have a program today where knuckleheads can go in the evening instead of being in the street.
Right.
And then work in finances. How about getting them a job so they don't have to slang?
What good is a job if they blow it all on the first pair of Jordans the first week, you know, or whatever they do.
But
and I'm not talking about black
people. But at least they work for it. Today they're driving people for it.
You see what we're losing out on
that's secondary. That's secondary.
It all comes
No. How are you going to say something you don't have?
Why can't they?
Well, okay, that's what I'm telling you.
That's what I'm saying.
Wait.
No,
but you didn't tell me about a program where they hit the streets and go get these boys that may end up in jail.
I don't know that much about it, honest. I'm not an advocate for the 100.
But you pulled out the financial
program. A review.
Oh.
Like the way that the movie critics give a review.
Okay.
Tell about it a little bit. They say what programs they have, and then they go,
you're not seeing me, though. I understand. We have the need for the financial
Absolutely.
Education.
It's just one of many programs.
Of what?
Okay.
They
could have other programs
okay.
in their organization.
Okay, well, then I'm fine.
That's pretty
huge. That's what you premiered.
That must be the biggest thing, right?
It was one component. I just decided to put economics as the star one, but they have a component of
stay out of jail.
Yeah.
They have something that says that. Stay out of jail. Stay in school.
How much of that.
Oh Lord.
Okay, let's go on to the next.
Let's go on because you're kind
of. No, I'm not. Don't go
to the next one.
All right, the next one was the National Urban League,
and we know we like a lot of Urban League, and we always, you know, they have been around for years, and they're pretty entrenched.
Peace, unity, and reconstruction of the black.
Absolutely.
I'm talking to myself.
Okay. All right, well, the Urban League, they, you know, have a whole mission statement with their strategy and everything, and they do have a five-point approach to provide economic empowerement. Everybody says
There we go.
You know, I don't
like
know
that.
I like that.
That's good.
But you didn't like it here. It's just,
But how?
Right, I don't.
They talking about credit cards. You know what I'm saying? Economic empowerment.
All right, here you go. And youth empowerment ensures the education of all children by providing access to early childhood literacy.
There you go.
Aftercare programs.
There you go.
College scholarships.
There you go. Aftercare.
Economic empowerment invests in the final financial literacy, which is what
there
I was talking about.
All right.
And employability of adults through job training, home ownership, and entrepreneurship.
Beautiful.
Sorry about things like you have been.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay. Hell like
and
that.
Quality of life empowerment.
Oh, yes.
Promotes community wellness through a focus of prevention, including fitness, healthy eating, and access to affordable
health care. You know what I want you to do next week?
What?
Look, these three chapters we talked about. Right. Tell me where they are in Sacramento.
Okay.
They have a chapter in Sacramento.
I have
and who it is. And I want to talk to them. Because I don't want to dog nobody on that.
Civic engagement and leadership empowerment encourages all people to take an active role to improve quality of life through participation in community service products and public policy initiatives.
I need to hook up with
them.
Civil
rights and racial justice empowerment. Guarantees equal participation in all facets of American society through proactive public policies and community-based programs.
See, now that's what you need. That sounds like you.
Yeah, it definitely does. And then it says, who we are, the National Urban League, is a historic civil rights organization dedicated to economic empowerment in order to elevate the standard of living historically underserved urban communities.
I like it. Because that's the main, that's
founded
the
in 1910 and headquartered in New York City, the National Urban League spearheads the efforts of its local affiliates through the development of programs, public policy research, and advocacy.
Okay.
Today, there are more than 100 local affiliates in 36 states and the District of Columbia, providing direct services and impact and improve the lives of more than 2 million people nationwide.
Now, you know what I'm going to do? I like that, Lorraine, and I want you to help me. And I want you to put it on Blog Talk that you're going to commit to help me.
All right.
Because, honestly, what you're saying, like you said, what they say sounds like what we're saying.
Right. It is.
We need to become a partnership.
It's both
because we in the street, and my thing is to be in the street where they can be on the TV.
And here's one more thing to cap it off that you will love about the National Urban League is that they have their they have good policy. Good politics, bad policy on the jobs bill.
Right.
And they have this is a whole article about what the jobs bill does and doesn't do for the
beautiful
goals of everything. And we can go into that deeper. I'm going to leave this one with you for sure so that you can look it over and see if there's something in there that you want.
I want to partner with the Urban.
Okay. And the Urban League is definitely, here's this information.
Right.
Okay. And then do we have time to do the third or no?
No.
We don't have
time. We don't have time to do the third. But I do like the Urban League.
Okay.
Like what
and here's their statement on President Obama's State of the Union address.
Well, say a little bit of it. We got a little bit of time for that.
The Urban League?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, let's see. On Wednesday night, which was the night of the State of the Union, President Obama acknowledged the deep pain of the economic crisis that has caused American families who are suffering the loss of the job or home and have seen the value of retirement accounts fall dramatically, or who have experienced a medical crisis without the safety net of health insurance. And then they applaud his early efforts to avoid even deeper financial disaster. And they talk about the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act and the millions who benefited from the extension of unemployment insurance and reductions in costs of COBRAs. And they said that while the president's plan for job creation is presented in last night's State of the Union address are an important first step in extending to small business much-needed credit and offering incentives for them to hire, raise wages and everything. But it says the magnitude of this crisis demands bold and unprecedented steps in order to meet the unprecedented challenges presented by this recession.
Right.
And then they just go on to talk about how...
And we'll talk more
about it.
Future shows, but what I'd like to do and what we want to do is to
partner with, and not knock the phone over,
right,
but partner with the Urban League because,
they
sounds good, and there's only certain times per year that you can do that. We're also doing the same thing with the United Way.
And they have a good watchdog ability about that.
Economic development in the Black community and economic entrepreneurship, that kind of spirit and attitude is the only thing that's really going to take the Black community where it needs to go.
Right.
Any community. I mean, any people, and there's no better time than right now. And I know just my experience and the fun that I'm having building my business based on what I've been working on for the past
year. And that's all I was saying before.
It's the fact
that you have that natural ability, but people do need to be guided in.
So what we're going to do is continue on. We're going to be back. We're going to take a break. And, once again, our theme, and it will be, is to help one person, one at a time. And our theme is peace and unity and reconstruction of the Black community, because there's no doubt that that's what needs to happen. And what we're going to do is look over our past, and we're just going to cut it short because, we kind of stopped. We stopped in the 60s, so we've kind of been, there's a big, big void that's been going on. So the one thing that will solve everything, we're going to talk about not the negative things, but we're going to talk about the things that we want, which is unity and peace and reconstruction and love.
Sounds good.
And, I ain't played Love Doctor in a while, so I'm feeling love, and I think Elijah Crowder finally took a nap.
Oh,
I'm
going to
play Love Doctor. We're going to take a break, but when we do come back, we're going to talk about our common destiny, Black and American society. That's going to be fun and fun to listen to, fun to talk about. Please call in if you can, and please give us a call. And that number is 917-889-9946. This is a diary out of SAC, and it's a beautiful day in Sacramento today. We'll be right back. That was the Love Doctor, and this is Stacy. This is a diary. We're coming out of Sacramento every Sunday from 3 to 4. It's me and Ray today, as every day. So,
every Sunday
from 3 to 4. So what we're talking about today and what we'll continue to talk about, and, as part of our, and my thing is, okay, I'd like to just take a look and take a look back as Black people, as to who we were that got us to the place where Martin Luther King had us and Bobby Kennedy had us and where we were at that time, because, my thing is to see in my grandson's lifetime, Black people prosper economically.
you know, and it's like we've gone backwards and when it comes to education. You know, it really, and that's where we stopped last week. And so what I'm going to do is read this whole thing, you know, and this is Common Destiny, Blacks in American Society, and what we're looking at is their the summary and conclusion. And when we spoke last time, we talked about that a large majority of blacks that lived in poverty, let's see, the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863, most blacks were denied the right to vote and education. Okay, the majority lived in poverty, and very few black children had the opportunity to receive a basic education.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's where I got really, you know, upset last week is that, you know, today we pretty much deny ourselves, and we have to come to the realization that that is what we're doing. You know, that's why knowing your history is vital to, you know, if you don't know your past, what they say, you're doomed to repeat it.
Oh, right.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
and we don't focus as black people on our past. It's like we're the one race of people where, oh, it's not so important as far as our culture to do that. But yes, it is, you know. So
mm-hmm.
that's what we're continuing today. It says today the situation is very different. In education, many blacks have received college degrees, like me and most of my siblings, and you and your siblings, from universities that formerly excluded them. In the workplace, blacks frequently hold professional and managerial jobs in desegregated settings. In politics, most blacks now participate in elections, and blacks, and that much we know, right, have been elected to all but the highest political when this was written.
Right.
So now we've overcome that.
Woo-hoo.
Okay.
You know, we need to...
And we need to look at that,
yes.
Take that, and look at that as a stepping stone to think for us and as individuals, what can we now do?
I felt all of this energy around that time, and people being really, you know, not to overuse the phrase, but being very, very hopeful.
Right.
You know, and it all went away so fast, and they started turning on, you know, what they'd hoped for.
Well, and you know, and that's what's going on right now.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And
people are too critical. They're too impatient. They need to watch and get behind what's going on. And
okay.
There are things to help them.
Okay, so now I'm going to go on. Yes, the great gulf that existed between blacks and whites black and white Americans in 1939 has only been narrowed. It has not been closed. One of three blacks still live in households with incomes below the poverty line. Even more blacks live in areas where ineffective schools, high rates of dependence on public assistance, severe problems of crime and drug use, and low and declining employment prevail. And we know that's even more so today. So, I mean... You know, that's what's going on today, I mean, as of when this thing was written, and that's still what's going on. So, let's see. Okay, the highest rate of dependence on public assistance. Okay, and race relations, as they affect the lives of inhabitants in these areas, differ considerably from black-white relations involving middle-class blacks. Lower-status blacks have less access to desegregated schools, neighborhoods, and other institutes and public facilities. And, you know, I just want to add, and it's just sad because what's going on today as far as our kids are concerned here in Natomas, a couple of schools are closing, and the biggest concern for the schools and the teachers is that they don't want to mix up with the South Natomas kids, you know, because they've been teaching North Natomas kids. And because the schools are combining, you know, of course, the students are combining, right? And some of the bad students and the good students are mixing. And even the teachers are concerned because they have to teach these so-called South Natomas kids. And if you live in Natomas, you live in Sacramento, there's about, I mean, what's the distance between, say, for instance, Intercom and Natomas High? What is that, about a mile?
Yeah.
It's about a mile. So to make such an issue over a mile worth of distance. I mean, Intercom High School didn't even exist 8 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Five years ago.
I haven't been here that long.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a new school, and
it filled up with all the kids from South Natomas because nobody had lived in North Natomas. So now that, I mean, it's just ignorance, you know, and we just have to fix it. So what we're trying to do is go back to what they're saying we were like back then when this study was done back in the 60s, and it's the same thing in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm trying to emphasize. It's the same thing in 2010. So the reasons for the continuing distress of large numbers of Black Americans are complex. Okay, racial discrimination continues despite the victories of the civil rights movement, yet the problems faced today by Blacks who are isolated from economic and social progress are less directly open to political, what is that?
I can't even see it.
Come closer. All right. Amelioration. A-M-E-L-I-O-R-A-T-I-O-N. Then were the problems of legal segregation and widely practiced overt discrimination. So basically, yeah, back then we didn't have a choice. So yes, the problem faced today by Blacks who are isolated, okay, slow overall growth of the economy during the 70s and 80s has been an important impediment to Black progress, not to mention crack, and I'm just adding that in. In the three previous decades, economic prosperity and rapid growth had been a great help to most Blacks. Educational institutions and government policies have not successfully responded to underlying changes in the society. Opportunities for upward mobility have been reduced for all lower status Americans, but especially for those who are Black. If all racial discrimination were abolished today, the life prospects facing many poor Blacks would still constitute major challenges for public policy. Summaries of major findings. This report summarizes and interprets a large body of data and research analysis concerning the position of Blacks in American society since the eve of World War II. We write at a time 20 years after the Kerner Commission following the summer riots of 1967. So this was written in 1987, maybe? It says, we write at a time 20 years after the Kerner Commission following the summer riots of 1967. So that would lead me to believe that this was written in 1987. And there's nothing that's gone to propel us. Yeah, I do, but I don't want to go. I'm reading it, so I don't want to go back to the beginning and give me the date, you know. Warned that ours was becoming a racially divided and unequal nation. We write 45 years after Gunnar Myrdal in An American Dilemma, and that name I'm going to spell it just in case anybody wants to look it up. G-U-N-N-A-R, that's his first name. Last name, M-Y-R-D-A-L, and what he wrote was, An American Dilemma challenged Americans to bring their racial practices into line with their ideals. Despite clear evidence of progress against each problem, Americans face an unfinished agenda. Many Black Americans remain separated from the mainstream of national life under conditions of great inequality. The American dilemma has not been resolved. The new American dilemma, the new American dilemma that has emerged after the civil rights era of the 1960s results from two aspirations of Black Americans. One, equal opportunity, the removal of barriers to employment, housing, education, and political activities, and the actual attainment of equality in participation in these sectors of life. So that's the barrier to Black success in America. Central to the realization of these aspirations are national policies promoting equality of opportunity for the most disadvantaged Blacks, especially in areas such as employment and education, and the preservation among Black people of attitudes and behavior towards self-help
and individual sacrifice that have enabled them to benefit from such opportunity. Black-white relations are important in determining the degree to which equal opportunity exists for Black Americans. Whites desire equality of treatment in social institutions and in governmental policy. However, many whites are less likely to espouse or practice equality of treatment for Blacks in their personal behavior. And we see it all day long. And I see it the last place I worked. It was like, you know, in insurance, yeah, the majority of people that work there, and being that I've worked in it for 10 years, were Caucasian. And one was when Barack was running for president, I mean, it was like he was my soul brother, giving me all the, you know, telling me all about all the good things that had happened and how Barack made the other side look stupid or whatever. And then somebody else, so-called his friend, would come up behind him and say, well, you know, all that is fake. He's telling you all that is fake. And so that's kind of like, you know, it's like, that's kind of like what they're saying right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, be real. Be
Absolutely.
Real. You know, whites desire quality of treatment in social institutions and in governmental policy. However, many whites are less likely to espouse or practice equality of treatment for Blacks in their personal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, at the core of Black-white relations is a dynamic tension between many whites, expectations of Americans, institutions, and their expectations of themselves. This state of relations is a significant improvement from 45 years ago, when majorities of white people supported discrimination against Blacks in many, against Blacks, where am I? Among people that have chosen to bring, sacrifice that have embedded, it pops up too quick. Disadvantaged, oh my God. But have enabled them to benefit from such opportunities. Black-white relations are important in determining the degree to which equal opportunity exists between Black Americans. Whites desire equality of treatment. Okay, it popped up really crazy. Thus, at the core of Black-white relations is a dynamic tension between many whites' expectations of American institutions and their expectations of themselves. This state of relations is a significant improvement from 45 years ago, when the majority of white people supported discrimination against Blacks in many areas of life. But the divergence between social principle and individual practice frequently leads to white avoidance of Blacks in those institutions in which equal treatment is most needed. The result is that American institutions do not provide the full equality of opportunity that Americans desire. And that's not surprising. So, you know, and that's what we have to understand as Black Americans. Black Americans kind of shine over it, because what are we supposed to do about it? You know, we just go on and live every day and do the best we can, right? I think
that would be the ideal. I don't think we do that often enough. I think we used to.
What do we do today? We don't even think about it, though. We don't even think about these issues today.
Right, exactly. Before, we used to step over them.
Right.
Now we pretend like they're not there.
Right.
And yet they are really hurting us.
Right.
Still, you know, and we are reacting to that.
Right. And then what about white Americans?
White Americans pretend like we're fine because we get to entertain them still, and we get to... you know, they have somebody in their life that they can refer to, that they deal with on a regular basis now, that they don't shy away because we're touching their food when we're packaging it, or teaching their children anymore as a teacher in a school or a principal or something like that. But at home, they don't have that same kind of example. They don't point out to their children on TV, do you notice that that there are none of your black friends on TV, like you can see yourself.
Right.
You know?
Right.
They don't point those things out.
And that's
something.
It doesn't
go to the home, and it's exactly what was being said
right
in there.
And that, and all of this is something that we not dwell on, but be aware of, you know, as both races.
And
you know,
I think
all
that's
races.
The difference.
Yeah.
Some people actually do still do the stepping over it, moving through it type of thing, so that they notice that it's there. But there's far more people coming up, especially,
right,
that just pretend like it's not there.
Right.
And yet they're angry and upset and scared, all of those things together. And that's why they behave the way that they do, I think.
And I think, you know, and then we look at, like I said before, we look at our government falling apart,
mm-hmm.
and our schools falling apart, and our churches falling apart. If I think, you know, when black-white relations kind of
mm-hmm.
try to be real and work together,
mm-hmm.
I think all of the rest of this stuff that's so falling apart, we'll get back together.
I agree.
You know, America's mm-hmm. biggest, last frontier is not Alaska, is not, but we have a black president, thank God,
mm-hmm.
we finally did it. You know, it's
right.
black-white relations.
Absolutely.
Sitting down and being real about history
everything.
And everything.
We need
and
to have frank discussions. We have to stop being scared.
Right.
Quit
being scared.
I want people to know about what it is to be
right.
this color of skin,
right.
and I want them to ask me questions.
And that's why I like to look at an intelligent discussion like this, even if I got to read it damn word for word and whatever we need to do, because we need to have an intelligent discussion. And until America does, you know, we kind of ruining ourselves
here,
as a country, here. You know. So what I'm going to play right now, we're going to take a little break. We're going to play A New Life. We're going to play
okay.
A New Life, because that's what we need. We need to just take a break. And I'm hoping black, white, all colors, you know, we get
and
together.
Breathe.
And
meditate. I know, Stacey.
Let's have a new life. Let's just change things, because we're ruining
mm-hmm.
each other. So here we go. We're going to take a break. I got to check on Elijah.
There you go.
All right. Bye. Hold on. We'll be back. It's the diary. I went and I checked on Elijah, but then I checked on my chicken in the oven. And when I came barbecue outside, I barbecue in the oven. Oh, my God, I almost passed out. I almost didn't make it back to the,
enjoyed your chicken.
Oh, my goodness, I know how to cook so well. It's just
wonderful.
Anyway, this is a diary. It's kind of depressing, you know, because I'm depressed because I try to do so much for my folks, you know, and it's like, well, why do I care? And it's like, man, I just want us all to care because, you know, I was so blessed to have my sons go. You know, and the show is over in 5 minutes, so we're not going to talk to them no more about this
thing, but we just gonna
continue.
Yeah,
of course.
Forever.
Run through
yeah,
the
forever.
Fabric of what you're
right,
doing.
Because
absolutely.
It's very important that we talk about our history as black people. We
mm-hmm.
are the, you know, and I'm biased, and that's why, you know, other people probably hate me, other cultures, but I'll, you know, we're the strongest people out there. I've checked out some stuff, and I look at my own folks, and between the Indian part and the African part, there's some strong folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, black people gone through so much, and in our recent history, there have been noble, strong black people that have stood up like soldiers, so we can be who we are today in 2010, and
mm-hmm.
I just think that as black people living today, we owe them so much to live a life that's honorable, that's just honorable, and I think many of us don't. We live a very selfish, self-centered life. And we're no different than any other culture, but I think as black people and the state of black America today, that we owe it to our children. I owe it to my grandson to keep on keeping on. I owed it to my sons to kick them out when they disrespected their mama. I owe that to them. You know, I owe that.
Teaching that.
I have to do that. And that's why I thank God for my ex-husband, that for the one time in his life, even though he owed me $60,000, I know one thing, he's going to have to go get a job, and I'm going to get my money. I'm going to start getting my money. But, you know, that's and one thing I tell people, I said, that blesses his life. Now he has his son, and
that blesses his
life.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? My life has been blessed because I've done what was right by my children.
There you go.
That's why he was there at the moment that either mom was going to kill us or you were going to take us.
Uh-huh.
And they took him. And he took him. You know what I'm saying? Mom didn't have to kill. And then mom can sleep at night knowing my boys ain't in the street here in Sacramento trying to survive. You know, and they will, because young Chris will get the older one in trouble, you know, but they with their dad, who they need to be with, they
good.
Need to get to know each other. That was my last words to them. I'll talk to you in a couple of years. Y'all need
to know. Just
know. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. I'm a mom that did what she was supposed to do.
Well,
I just let them know I ain't going to be trying to chase you, but
right.
I'm the mom that did what
now
mom was supposed to do.
Yeah, of course you did.
You know what I'm saying? So it's not like, you know, they boys, so they think somebody's supposed to get their butt.
Right.
This is a diary. This is how we do it. Please join us every Sunday from 3 to 4.
Ooh.
This is me and Ray. We love doing this because I love my people. And step by step, bit by bit, just like I'm going to build up my business, I was self-employed before. And back then, I was making $1,500 a day, and me and the kids was chilling. You know, we're going to do that again. So step by step, I'm building my business. I'm taking part of that money, up to 50% of my money, and I'm going to put it back in this organization, and we're going to get things rolling.
What is the organization?
It's the Association of African American Single Mothers. It's direct. This is Ray.
Hi.
We're here every Sunday from 3 to 4. I love y'all, and please get with us next Sunday, and have a good week.
And peace.
And peace, and most of all, God bless all of y'all.
think I've gone on too long.
Oh, you know what? No, sometimes I think that conversation, you have to have that. And I think people talk that way. It makes it natural.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on. I mean,
okay.
When you're passionate about something, you go on about it because it needs to be developed in your head. And a lot of times people take that ride right along with you. You know,
mm-hmm. Take a ride.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, as much as people say that
depressing.
I talk too much,
mm-hmm.
They also
oh,
say,
really? You? You?
They also say, if people that I've known that are in love with me or loved me said that they liked it because it was like I developed what I wanted to say to them, too,
okay.
So that they understood.
I'm a sucker. I sound like a sucker.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You say, yeah. Yeah, you do.
A sucker is kind of a good thing, I think.
Yeah, well.
I do, in a way, because it still means that you have, you know.
That's why you get fired, because they're like, is she a sucker?
No, because you have faith in things. You have
yeah.
The idea that you,
I have
you know,
to. I'm too old.
And that there are, you know, when you're not a sucker anymore, that means you're jaded and you're hard. Who wants to be that?
Hey, but you know what I am,
so,
though? Was it you know what I am?
What
I'm 45, and all my kids are out of the house.
I'm 45 this week,
God.
And I love 45.
Okay, well, I got to go make my sauce.
Okay.
Be outside.
All right.
Okay.
See ya.
All right.